And hello, everyone. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kay Thompson Live here on blogtalkradio.com. We're going to be talking to the other people on the panel, and that's Wayne Gilman, and also Byron Saunders, and me. Eric Payne is on assignment. I'm hoping that he will be able to be calling in, but if not, we will be holding down the fort. Wow, a lot of things in the news, especially with Trump. Dump Trump. Boy, what a day. What news. He is impossible. He is absolutely impossible. And we have, let me see, are we talking to, who's on the line right now? Wayne Gilman, are you there? Wayne Gilman, are you on?
Hey, it's
Byron
me.
Saunders?
Can you hear me, Ma?
And Byron is here as well.
Is
yes,
Eric, can you hear me?
Okay. You have to speak up a little bit.
This is Eric. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Eric. Yes. Okay. All right.
I'm just calling
so
in real
are we
quick.
Here?
I'm just saying, you know, well, and Byron, hey, welcome to the show, everybody. I'm on assignment, as my mom said. I just wanted to real quick put my 2 cents in. You know, yesterday was the congressional address of Trump, the 45th president, to Congress, and it was quite a show. If you were looking for from a just a show, period. I had to turn it off after a little while, but if you can always tell how a president is doing real quick if he's bringing the country together, whether both sides stand up or whether people even come to greet him when he first walks in. And I think that the fact that not a lot of Democrats are standing in line to shake his hand when he first came in or when he left, how quickly it took him to get out of the chamber is indicative of, you know, even though he claims he wants to bring people together, you know, the guy spent his whole campaign tearing us apart, so I don't see how that could happen at all.
Mm. Byron?
Yes.
Is Byron
well,
on? Byron?
I am here. Indeed, Trump's presentation was the so-called softer version of his bombastic usual self, but he's still the same Trump no matter – I mean – let's face it, you come to the well of the House, and this is an opportunity to get a chance to show that you are very presidential. And for your State of the Union address, you want to be able to present policy, legislation, not just words of goodwill and cheer, because this is not a PR moment. This is the time when the nation is tuned in to see what policies are going to be the new laws to help guide and, of course, if in his case, prove that he knows how to fix what's wrong. And yet, in an hour's worth of talk, no policy, no legislative notions to put to the both the Senate and the Congress, although he says he wants them to work together, but the notion of working together is to create legislation that both parties can agree upon. And with saying all of that is to say this, most of the stuff that he presented, and I did the fact-checking that the Washington Post printed out this morning, most of the issues that he brought forward, the Obama administration was the ones who made those efforts possible for job unemployment to be low, for the Chrysler, the Ford deals. All of that was pre-inauguration. The one thing he did do, which he's taking all the credit for, Of course, is the failed raid that sent another United States personnel back in a body bag. And yes, that was the highlight of his presentation.
Yeah.
But even the critics from the military and intelligence say that was a failed mission. So that young man unnecessarily lost his life. And
yeah,
yes,
we're going to also
bring
in Wayne
chance.
Gilman. I think he's on the line right now. Wayne, are you there?
Yes,
Wayne
I am,
Gilman.
Kay. How you doing, Byron and Eric? How's everyone?
We're good.
Yeah, well, I'm not after last night's theatrical. You know, he certainly has a lot of thespian character within him, and he put on, I thought it was a great performance, you know, but again, as you said, Byron, no substance. He did offer a few things out there, you know, some red meat topics in terms of trying to twist the Democrats. He's got, he realizes his back is up against the wall now. So in order to play fair, you know, he's got to do things that may be somewhat titillating to the Democratic side. But at the same time, you know, there's nothing new, as you just said. Obama brought the unemployment rate down to some of the lowest levels. Whether you feel that the kind of quality jobs that were being offered are mediocre or they're professional or at least leading to some sort of career, because that's another debate. And there's some people who tend to feel that Obama did nothing, but Trump is capitalizing on the unemployment factor. And I thought what he did with that soldier's wife, the gentleman Owens, who lost his life, was despicable. I thought he milked that for every moment that he could. And I just think, I you know, to take advantage of somebody who's vulnerable at that point, and I know she wanted to honor her husband, and I'm not saying she was not worthy of the applause, but I just felt he milked that. You know, and it was nothing to say about it.
That was tacky.
I felt that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely tacky.
You know, getting back to his proposed budget, I think there's a very dangerous issue that's going to really spark more confrontation between both parties is the $54 billion increase to the defense budget. Mind you, right now, 66 and two-thirds of the tax dollars collected already go to the Defense Department. Cutting entitlement programs like the NEA, National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Humanities, and public broadcasting, and his desire to cut those funds is only represents 0.06% of the budget. He's not saving us money, and increasing the defense budget is tantamount to saying he's about to take our country back into another war. This
exactly.
is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a Republican thing. I mean, as soon as a Republican gets into office, you can go back to the last half dozen Republican presidents. That, you know, they always build up defense budgets. And as far as the entitlement programs are concerned, a lot of them feel that, you know, they're a waste of time. So, you know, it's unfortunate that we have this mindset, and that's why there's no meeting of the minds, no compromise. Until somebody who is a supporter of Trump is victimized and they don't know what it's like to have decent health care, they can't find work, you know, or something that requires them to be part of the fabric of an entitlement program, then and only then they understand.
Boy, I'm telling you. Anybody
The other issue, Kay and Eric and Wayne, is that I find very disturbing. His notion of legislation is an executive order photo op opportunity. And let's just take a look at what that means. February 1st, he has his photo op opportunity to celebrate Black History Month. It took him 28 days to bring in the presidents of the HBCUs to have a photo op talk session. Do you know how long that talk session lasted exactly?
How long?
12 minutes.
Oh, God.
12 minutes. The presidents were given sometimes 2 minutes or less. Those who were had an opportunity to speak, no policy discussion, no legislation discussion, another pimping opportunity is all that was. And that's disturbing. That's very, very insulting to the president. And then you have Secretary Betsy DeVos come out and make her blunder, saying that HBCUs were
Brian, are what again? The historic what?
Historic black colleges and universities.
Oh, right.
Historic mm-hmm. black colleges and universities, and saying that the reasons why they were so successful is because of school choice, totally negating the fact that it was through racism and white supremacy which kept African Americans out of every university in this
exactly.
country,
mm-hmm.
not
mm-hmm.
because of school choice, but because of racism. And she's our Secretary of Education, who is completely ignorant of the history of the HBCUs and the reasons why they were land-grant schools, why they were important to the African-American community, and why the
right.
success.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely
and so,
right.
But Steve Bannon at the Republican CPAC meeting said it clearly that the reason why they have put these people into the secretary's positions of running the federal government agencies is to help deconstruct the federal government. This is dangerous, folks. And I mean, you read in the Washington Post about the State Department, the fact that they have no undersecretaries. Tillerman is the only voice that's there. He couldn't even pick his own undersecretary to be his assistant. And right now, the State Department is operating as our global diplomatic agency with some of the most understaffed agencies.
We know what you're going to say.
In the entire administration. And
yeah,
this is
yeah.
dangerous
it's
because
a joke.
This is where we. Yeah, it's a joke. It's a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And the morale there is absolutely sinking because nobody knows what their job is going to be, who do they report to, and yet the global community depends upon the United States for diplomacy. And we have
yeah.
no diplomacy at this time.
We have no leader.
No leadership.
No leadership. I'm telling you. It's really amazing when you think of the importance of the black colleges. You wonder what's going to be happening with the monies going to the black colleges. What's going to
yes.
be happening to a lot of the organizations and a lot of the people around who are depending on, you know, different governmental programs, you know, to get by. So what do we tell them? What do we tell people? We can't even trust the federal government because we're dealing with someone who just does not know. And it seems to be that he doesn't care. It's like a game to him.
Exactly. And having grown up in Washington, I can tell you there is no other industry other than politics. There's no farming.
Exactly.
There's no corporations, no Fortune 500 companies who have their warehouses there. The only industry is politics. And if you don't know how to play that game and you come to Washington, D.C., and you have no initiatives to address the nation's need for infrastructure money and support for place
Hello?
Both weather. Hello.
Yeah,
yeah
go
look
ahead.
At the look at the number of disasters that have taken place since he's been in office for 40 days, and the administration has failed to address any of them, which shows
mm-hmm.
that they cannot multitask. They are nowhere near what President Obama did in his first 40 days, where he had the TARP. He created the TARP situation. He had gun issues with massacres in schools. I mean, this is just a disaster. This is the perfect storm just waiting to happen in which the
yeah.
administration will not be able to address the nation's needs because they cannot multitask or stay focused on what the country needs versus what Trump needs.
You know, I have something to ask you guys. Did Trump go to any college other than his own?
Very good. And,
really?
And
did he? I'm serious.
Well, I don't want to nobody
says it all.
I know there are a lot of people who are crediting his father for his education and the development of Donald Trump. You know, it's just unfortunate. Mm. But this is pathetic. But I tell you, in spite of all this going on, we are a government of checks and balances. And I just say, at some point, there's going to be a correction, like the stock market gets a correction. You know, I was talking to some friends of mine who basically they're day laborers hanging out looking for work at places like Home Depot, Costco, and stuff like that. And they're afraid to even make an appearance there because many of them are not documented, and they're afraid that that even though there's been there's an understanding that in New York State they're not going to go after these people, you know, willfully to just lock them up and send them back, but they're afraid. Many of them are living in fear. A lot of them can't find shelter, and it's unfortunate, you know, what's going on. New York, which basically gone through a renaissance with tourism in the last 10 to 12 years, is going to suffer one of the greatest losses this summer because of the nonsense that, you know, this native son of ours is doing in the White House, you know?
This is not funny, but I'm laughing because the fact that what you're saying is that, look, I don't even understand what the guy's talking about half the time. You know, I think that I think that on television they were saying that he was cutting down his calling people, the Twitter in the morning.
Yes, the Twitter. Yeah.
Now we have to give him credit because his Twitters are profound. You have to really, I don't mean to laugh, but yes, I do. It's pathetic. It makes me nervous.
What's going to happen?
Well, with respect to the question you asked about his education, he received an economics degree from Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania in 1968.
Did he finish?
And that's basically his educational background. Okay. Seems to be some question about the degree itself, but we'll give him that for knowing maybe a little bit about business, because 5 bankruptcies tells me he doesn't know a lot about businesses. So
for him to always win the apprentice, he knows a lot about it. He knows how to be crooked.
Yes. So with tongue in cheek, you know, but with 5 bankruptcies, that shows you that his acumen is not that of Warren Buffett's or, say, Zuckerberg or, you know, even the billionaire clubs that he claims that he's a billionaire. So let's talk about where does he fit in intellectually and within the scope of being a certified business person recognized by the other billionaires. They're not particularly caring about him. And it's interesting because when I go back to the State Department with Tillerson, you know, who's a very astute business person, and the billionaires that he's put into office, once again, going back to Bannon's comments.
Oh, please.
He's
a danger. He's the one
who's
a danger person.
Yes, he's the danger. Exactly. And the danger is that if you render your federal government dysfunctional, it is a CIA game of black ops operations in which you render your government dysfunctional so that you can then create the coup d'etat.
And the Republicans
have been engaged in this for the last 30 years of trying to notice their agenda is always about the government spending too much. But who is the one who's breaking the budget? It's always been the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So we really have a problem, especially now, because we seem to be just sitting still in the water, and any disaster that comes up next, God forbid, we have to have presidential or executive involvement, because right now, as I said, with California's rain situation, we've got the situation with the tornadoes that just struck. We've got the situation where these elements of weather-related disasters, and even the pipeline that he, the Dakota pipeline that he's touting, there have been leaks along the pipeline itself. So it's already in polluting the Missouri River. So
And the Indian people out there are really very, very nervous.
That's
they don't know
exactly
what's going on and what's
going
to be happening.
Exactly. Exactly. So we've got issues already, and there's no administration. Where are they?
Because
they
he doesn't
doing?
Have any information to give you. He doesn't have anything to draw on. No plan. No plan to save this country from disaster.
Yes.
Well,
exactly.
So what has to happen?
He is repeating a great deal of what he said during the course of his campaign. I mean, 90% of last night's address was really a repeat with a different approach in delivering the message. And that was the only thing. As I said, it was a performance. This man is a thespian. And the deal is that he talked about the pipeline, that what I thought was so horrific was this Victims of Immigrant Crime organization. I forgot the acronym for it. And it was, I just thought that was so insulting and despicable. Like there's only immigrants commit crimes out here.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
We have no homegrown terrorists or anything like that. And, you know, it just, as I said, I can't believe that the government, I mean, the government in which we have checks and balances, are now weighing everything that's going on. Even members of the Supreme Court, you know. I've seen some Republicans, you know, who are still doggedly determined to pick them apart. I'm certain the Bush family feels that way. You know, they're very quiet. But I am certain that they're thoroughly disgusted with what's going on there. So they're just giving him a matter of time to hang himself. And the one said that he said something, he didn't mention it last night to my knowledge, but he said at some point before last night's address that America's biggest enemy out here right now is North Korea. And I admit that the gentleman running that country is not of this planet, but Trump is a close second. I'm sorry. Trump is a close second. And I mean, that's just how I feel.
Listen, guys, this stuff is not funny. This is serious.
It's not. It really is. But I think on the bright side, Kay, because you do ask the right question, what do we do? How does the country?
What do we do? I'm serious.
How do the
leave the country?
Right, how do the Democrats?
How? Where?
Yeah,
when?
And where? And when? And why? And why is it taking so long? But I think there's something really happening that we'll just have to look at for the next 30 days. The reemergence of President Obama back into the Democratic Party
is showing us signs. Yeah.
Yes, there are signs that the Democratic Party are gathering for the battle. And,
Okay.
I say that because what I found very interesting is that, yes, at the DNC convention where Perez was named the chair, I'm in some aspect I do understand the battle lines that were set up with Bernie Sanders, progressive Democrats, who really wanted the congressman from, was it Minnesota, Ellison, to be the chair versus Perez, who is the Obama-Clinton factor.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
What's really interesting is that Ellison is the first sworn-in Muslim in the Congress. Now,
mm-hmm.
the Democratic Party would have had a serious image issue right now if Ellison were chosen. It was a good balance to take Perez, who is also Latino, to bring him in as the chair, and then Ellison as the second, because
yeah.
now we're talking about crossing the lines to bring them to a marriage, to the table, to say progressives and status quo Democrats, who, and isn't it interesting that both of them are people of color?
Mm-hmm.
So that there's an initiative that says, in my mind, the Democratic Party is realizing that there is a grander scheme that says, statistically, there are more people of color when you add Asians, Latinos, which are Hispanic and Mexican, African American, and you have the feminist movement. Those four elements represent a majority of America. And if they are literally going to change the landscape in the next midterm elections, they're going to have to address those issues, and they're going to have to take their heads out of the sand, because the major issue, other than immigration, is race and racism, and they've got to address it.
Exactly. Well,
I'm sorry, Kim.
No, go ahead, Blaine.
I wanted to ask Byron, what was his thoughts about the former Kentucky governor giving the party's response last night?
Well,
wait a minute, what?
Snafu. Yes, he was. Bashir gave the Democratic response. Yes. Other than this, the misstep of saying he was a Democrat and then he said he was a Republican, I thought the the essence of his direct conversational format with the president, as also with the Republican diehards, was probably a good response, because it didn't set up confrontation. What it set up was almost like the FDR fireside chat, which is like, here I am with your people. I'm in Mitch McConnell's backyard. And Mitch McConnell is a danger to all of us. And here I am telling you, we made the Affordable Care Act work. And, you know, that's another thing, because vilifying the Affordable Care Act, Trump is very guilty in playing that race card last night by calling it Obamacare.
Oh, yeah.
He consistently called it that just to stir up his base. And as I understand, Ivanka Trump helped him to write that speech, not anybody else in his inner circle. So we already know they were playing. That's right. We already know that they were playing to their base and the fears of race.
Right.
As they usually have been doing throughout this entire charade. But I thought the Kentucky ex-governor was just as down home and country as it could be, you know, and I was not offended by what he said.
Well, I'm sorry to be laughing, but the point is, I really thought this was going to be a serious thing, you know, but here you have somebody who really, honestly, does not know what he's doing. You know, how could you come into or even run for the presidency of the United States if you don't know the issues, if you don't know the country, if you don't know what to do? Is today Monday? Is today Tuesday? Come on. You know, I felt very, very upset about it initially. But I can't help but laugh at it right now, because the fact that there's so many things that they're doing wrong and they don't know that they're doing it wrong, and sometimes they do know they're doing it wrong and they don't care.
Well, you know, the thing is, Jay, I think it got to the point where he was not even sure if he wanted the job. But by the time he had a few Republican operatives or the conservative element within the Republican Party throw their support behind him, he felt, well, this was an opportunity for them to have their voices heard, and he falls in that mix. So whether he's scripted by his wife or Bannon or any one of, you know, the people that he has in play there, there is an agenda. There is someone out there. His core constituency is what's going to keep him alive until he falls apart. And I mean, when it happens, it's going to be so awful. It's going to be worse than what Nixon did. or at least on the same level of what happens, if, you know, to call for his impeachment. You know, again, Russia was not mentioned not once last night. You know, it was just all these things that he, you know, it was supposed to be the State of the Union. He didn't even want to call it the State of the Union, you know? I mean, and I just think it's just unfortunate that he's used a few people who look like us to prop up his game and say, oh, I'm not racist, you know? I have this one here and that one there. And, you know, I mean, it just bothers me when I see that double-handedness. But at the same time, people who are in the know, because there are a lot of us who didn't pay attention to that speech last night. They figured it was more the same Looney Tunes that he was capable of doing during a news conference. But, you know, it's just that I just hope that most people who did, who happen to be meaningful Democrats, could read through the performance that he put on there, and that was it.
Even when you have even the Russian president backing off of being seen with him or something, you know the thing has hit the fan, you know? Have we heard of Putin lately? Putin probably doesn't exist for now, you know? But it's ridiculous. And you don't even know which way to go. You know, because we depend on the federal government for them to be knowledgeable, for them to know about running a country, you think?
Mm-hmm.
But what has to happen? What has to happen?
Well,
he's in the first term, 4 years. He's in for another 4 years. Are people going to – will the people vote him again? Give me some help here.
I don't think he's going to make it through the four. I mean, especially – I'm not saying that I'm not advocating physical harm. I just think there's enough with these programs out here. You know, I would be amazed. I know he seems to have gotten the business community there and all that, but I just think that something will happen that's going to trip him up. And I think the cast of characters that he has in his semi-assembled cabinet are going to be all. It's like I know Byron had mentioned that meeting with the Black College president, and it was a photo op in which that young lady, Kelly, I can't even think of her last name now, the one that basically corrected his image with women in the country. She was hired to be his makeup artist in terms of trying to attract the female vote after his disturbing comments. You know, there's a picture of her at that same meeting in which she spoke 12 minutes, and she's got her legs up on a sofa, you know, and smiling. I'm assuming that she was aware that she was being photographed, and it was
of course,
no big deal. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the deal is that she herself, I think since they've been in there, there's been no respect, you know, or very little respect and homage paid to what it means to hold that highest office of the land, the decorum that's expected of being president. Last night was the only thing that seemed somewhat presidential, and if I know him any better, he probably had seen so many State of the Union addresses by the time he was a damn child that he would know in what cadence to present it and when to go off script and act like he'll give his one-liners and all that stuff. It's not like as if he did something monumental last night. I mean, I don't even want to go there, but, you know, the bottom line is every time I think about it, I have to remember this is not my program, and I have to watch what I say.
Go ahead, Wayne.
Today I defer to you. No, I'm just, it just angers me to see that. And I've had, you know, I've had discussions with some people who tend to support him. I had a conversation with a gentleman the other day. No, because, somebody I do business with, and sometimes I question even why I still have him as someone I do business with. But the fact of the matter is that I always am curious. I'm a sponge for trying to figure out why people see support for this man and have the and just have the audacity to refer to Barack Obama as being a racist. And that same person the other day, wanted to explain to me that Israel was the creation of Great Britain and had nothing to do with the United Nations. Anything that I've ever read, again, I'm going personal, and that's off topic, but I find unfathomable how some people can bring themselves to show, well, give this man a chance, you know? I mean, maybe some of the things he's doing will be of benefit to all of us. And I hadn't seen anything in 30 days that basically smacks of that. I mean, I want the bad people out of here, too. Don't get me wrong. I'm all in favor of that. But it's just the way he's going about it is totally off the chart.
It's amazing how people are really putting up with it. And I can't help but laugh. It has gotten to the point where it's like a clown show. You know, I hate to say that, but we're talking about, you know, the most important, country in the world.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And here we have someone in charge of the biggest country, the strongest, the most powerful country, the United States of America, and we have somebody leading or in a leadership position who does not understand. And because, he doesn't really, it's like he doesn't really know the basics, you know?
I went to
Washington, went to, the White House and the other house a couple months ago. And, people were really, the talk was all, Trump then. So, you wonder why this is happening now. What's going to be happening to the country in a few years? Because the fact that he just doesn't know what he's doing. He's not even surrounding himself with people who can fit in with the program that, when I say program, with the way that the Obama set it up. Okay, we were ahead of things with Obama being in because he represented us. He represented a large, segment of the population. Okay, and then this nut comes along, and you're really not even taking anything seriously. How can you take somebody like Trump seriously?
Well, I don't see them dismantling the Affordable Health Care Act. You know, I mean, they can do what they want to destroy Obama's image. And I think, Byron, you're right. I think after a while you're going to see an emergence, which probably something that no other president would have done, within the first 100 days of the new president running the country. But I would like to see the Obamas to come back and step up. The Clintons, I think they've had their day now. And I just think that the party is it's ripe for a wholesale change. But, I mean, a change that's going – we need a new group of young people who are going to bring about a meaningful
change. They don't
want
any business with Trump, for goodness sakes. They can't – how are they going to relate to him? The business of running the country, how is he going to relate to, the millennials, for instance?
They probably think that he's lost it.
Say again?
Really worth paying attention. There's a dynamic that's going on across the country that's really worth paying attention to that's outside of D.C. politics, and that is in the state houses. In the state houses, for instance, in Kansas was the test state for the Koch brothers and their so-called austerity programming.
Yeah.
And what's going on in Kansas, which was that was supposed to be their state where they would cut taxes, engage in the austerity programming that the Koch brothers have been, played out because they're really not the far right Tea Party members that put Trump in the office. This was the other conservative side of the Republican Party. And what's happening in the state of Kansas as we speak today is that that state is literally going bankrupt. All of its social programs, its educational programs, they are not collecting enough taxes from the corporate industries that they've given tax breaks to, and the state is running on fumes. And there is a backlash from the Republican Party. Now Kansas is a Republican state. So you have to look at where the Republicans themselves are blowback. There's a blowback on the Trump initiative, and it's been indicated that even the powerful chairs of the Republican Party in the Senate and the Congress are saying that Trump's budget is whack. It's way out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
Lindsey Graham yesterday said the budget is dead on arrival.
That's his quote. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you know, if you, this is where the battle lines will fall. You'll see it start to crumbling. We thought the Republican Party was really through with this last election coming up, but they some kind of way got in some oxygen into their lungs and generated enough support, just enough, not popular vote, but just enough within the ranks of the states that were being challenged. And remember, Trump only won those states by 1%. 1%. So that's really the margin of victory was not an overwhelming, huge,
right.
as he would like to tell it, turnout in his favor, because it was already at the fringe of it. It was already tattering. And so the Republican Party is still in big trouble. And this is where the Democrats must seize the opportunity right now. You're right. They've got to energize it. They must find a way to bring the millennials back into the process, because many of them walked away when Bernie wasn't the chosen one. And he should still be in it. Yeah, that's right. And yet, what we are seeing right now, he was the one. But what I sense with the Democratic Party's response, other than the former governor of Kentucky, you had Perez, and both Perez and Ellison on the stump this morning challenging Trump to almost in his face. And that's what you got to do. You got to get in his face.
Mm-hmm.
Go toe-to-toe. It's going to be ugly, but it's a battle royale. And he likes it like that. But you know what? He cannot play multiple wars going on in his own country. He has no
capacity. You know,
I would like to
test his history on black history. I would like to tell him or say to him, Mr. Trump, do you know that man, a walking, living man, came into existence in Africa? That the first man, the first woman, was African? He'd pass out. And that's part of black history. I would love to be able to present that to him. I have all my books here. I have, Dr. Ben's stuff, Dr. Clark's stuff. Dr. Jeffries, I have Gus Sennenberg's stuff. I mean, I have all this collection of, where man came from. Where do we have Ivan Van Sertimer, who was, professor from Rutgers, who, died. Really, I got a chance, to interview him. But, look, can you imagine somebody presenting
Donald
that
Trump's,
to Trump? What would
Donald,
be his response?
Donald Trump's knowledge of black history began with the Central Park Five. And Amarosa,
By the way, I have the person. Remember, I was telling you about this friend of mine who was a known journalist, and she is coming on the air because she is back, okay? And that is Anna. And she was the one who broke that story. As a matter of fact, the Central Park Five, when Donald Trump did that full-page ad, Wayne, and you remember, And Byron, you probably remember also, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I know I do,
dear,
because we were all on the air. We didn't know you at that time, Byron, but we wished you well.
Right.
Anyway, we didn't know you. But anyway,
right.
Really, and it's just ridiculous, you
yes.
know. And to bring some of this stuff to him, I would love to have him sit down and talk to Dr. Ben, but Dr. Ben had, you know, died some time ago. But,
died,
you know, he
yes.
was... He introduced us to where we came from, okay?
Yeah.
Some of us had
yeah.
never even heard of it or imagined it until he told us about the Olduvai Gorge in West Africa. And the first bones that they found was of a woman, by the way. Did you know that?
Wow.
And because the Leakeys were... Louis Leakey
That's
and his
right.
son, I forget his name, you know, they
yes.
were the first ones, they were on digs, you know, on these, what is it called?
Yes.
You know, scientific digs,
yeah.
you know, and they came
digs,
upon
right.
some, you know, some bones, and those were early man, early
yes.
woman, okay, and when they did all the investigation, you know, the scientific, you know, investigations and whatnot, they found that the oldest bones that they found wasn't of a man, it was of a woman. So I hate to drop this on you, but do you understand who you're talking to?
Well, his concept, and this is,
I come
I'm
from
glad
greatness.
You brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up because going from Martin Luther King's birthday celebration
mm-hmm.
month into Black History Month into Women's
mm-hmm.
Month, he's got a bigger challenge because the women's coalitions right now are
yep.
the ones that are going to bite him in the butt real hard. These next 31
yeah,
days, mark my words, the women's coalition and are going to be on top of him like white on rice. And he can't handle that. Because there are a lot
yeah.
that is when the day after the inauguration, women around the world showed that they are much stronger than his base support. And now
especially African American women.
Especially them and women around the world. So there's some initiatives, and I don't see how he can last another 30 days in that kind of an environment. And the pressure is on, and he knows it.
Yeah.
And that young lady that he's been counting on to resurrect his image with
Anna Rosa.
Kellyanne Conway, she's out the picture
yeah.
now. They're trying to...
Oh, you're talking
yeah.
about
you know,
the white woman who talks
speech.
For him, you know. But Anna Rosa
yeah.
is
yeah.
always with Trump, you know. She was with The Apprentice. She was one of the
please.
First people on The Apprentice. So she is constantly at his side, if you noticed.
Yes,
but I mean, the thing is, it's just imagery. It's smoke. There's no substance there. It's just, you know, a facade. And that's the thing that, you know, last night was about a facade. And it's unfortunate that, you know, some people are going to look at what he did and then right away just have a completely different perspective because he somehow figured out how to act a certain way. But once you get this man off script, you know, and he is forced to go on his own, to speak of his own volition and act of his own volition, that's where he gets into trouble. And this is what I feel is going to lead to his continued vulnerability, and sooner or later, something's going to happen. Either the Russian element's going to crop up to the point of no return with what he did with the election. You know, there are people out there watching him. People who are insulated from the process of being let go by his office, you know, whether he's president or whatever it is that he thinks he may be at this point, that he's invincible, that he can just change the world because,
yeah.
you know, he has all that power. But I just think sooner or later something's going to give. And we all have aspirations that more and more people can get out here to work and that people can live, you know, that there's a measure of civility, that there's less crime, that we learn to respect one another as a people. He doesn't
mm-hmm.
have far to go to get an education on the African-American community. He needs to sit mm-hmm. up one day, you know, at that museum and not do a photo op and read some books, you know.
That's right.
He should,
it's true.
You know, I mean, that's
so
really
true.
What he needs to do, you know. I mean, everything with him is a photo op. You know, it's ridiculous. And
I'm looking right now at a book that I have here. The name of it is "They Came Before American" by Professor Ivan Van Sertima. You know, who came to LIB, and I had the pleasure of interviewing him. And then he was at Rutgers University, I think, in down in Trenton or that area. Not Trenton, but the town next to it. But he died. Anyway, he died while he was here. So, but I do have that book. They Came Before America. Okay.
Right.
So we're doing more stuff with Black History. However, still not enough. All right. And all the Black History programs. As a matter of fact, I have to give a little bit of kudos there to Amiri Baraka's son, Ras Baraka, the mayor of Newark.
Yes.
If you go downtown Newark, I'm telling you, you will be surprised.
You will be absolutely surprised.
Yeah. And it's Newark, New Jersey, is the center for higher education in the state of New Jersey, because there are more colleges in one area. You know, I think there are about 6 or 7 in one area, downtown Newark, than in any other state.
Mm-hmm. And the Amistad program is being tested in the state of New Jersey, right there.
The
in
Amistad
Newark,
program was written by my ex-husband.
Yes.
Right.
So I follow. I keep
which
up with
says,
that. I get
Bill Payne, which says that he got it passed in Congress that the African American history must be taught in the state of New Jersey. That was law.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
And if you look it up, I give credit to Bill, because that was quite an endeavor.
Yes, it is. Yes, and they are continuing to push their agenda and initiatives to make sure that the state complies with that. And it's not easy, because you got Christie in the office, and of course, when Republicans are in office, it seems like there's a let up of making sure mandates are passed over and sort of given a free pass with respect to
I'm laughing because when I see Governor Chris Christie now I have to laugh because we knew of him, you know, and we know.
I remember Bill saying that he had quite a contact, with him, and he, you know, was always bringing up the fact that a lot of these programs, the curriculum within the New Jersey school system, should have that, you know, as a given, no matter what part of Jersey you're from,
you know,
whether it's a predominantly white community or. But this is the only way these people are going to learn our history, you know. And it's true, and I remember having that conversation the last time I saw him at the fundraiser, you know. So
Donald Payne Jr.'s fundraiser,
Right, his fundraiser. So I'm hopeful that, you know, that means a lot, because until people know what's going on, you know, it's just unfortunate. Our history gets washed away, and we need to do more to preserve it, you know, and stuff like that.
Exactly.
I just think it's unfortunate sometimes, you know, there are people who just don't know what greatness we come from and what we're capable of doing.
Speaking of history, I have some history of New York for us this evening. On March the 2nd, actually February 28th in 1708. Did you know that on that date, one of the first recorded slave revolts occurred in America? It happened in Newtown, Long Island, New York. 7 white people were killed. Following the rebellion, a black woman was burned alive, and one Native American man and 2 black men were hanged. 1708.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, Byron, I'm glad you brought that up, and that's something worth researching, because there's a lot of the slavery post Civil War, not post, prior to Civil War activities that occur right in this New York metropolitan area that you know, we reside in. And a lot of it is swept under the rug. You think it's something from down south, you know?
Right, exactly. And that was
and a lot of
you know what I think? You know what I think? I think we should start a movement to get paid from the federal government because of the our ancestors who were slaves. And they never got their money, their payment for their work. They were never,
they were never compensated for
I think we should start that movement. I want to be paid.
I'm
not kidding
you
all. Yes,
well,
listen, we did all the work.
Yeah.
And but I will tell you this, because I was in Mississippi post-Katrina work, and definitely at post-Katrina, I went on one of the properties of those who were given the 40 acres and a mule, and those communities are still sustaining because many of them and their families hold on to that property for dear life.
Yeah.
So you don't hear about them, but they're there. And
it's
a part of pride that they're still holding on to their property.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Hello.
Remember Emmett Till?
Yes. Yes.
Hey, hello.
Oh,
you guys hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
His mother had his body brought to, I think it was Abyssinia Baptist Church.
Yes.
And she
opened
the coffin.
Right. It was a sad occasion, you know. But it's funny, Byron, as you mentioned that situation, I had a chance to see the movie again, Rosewood. I think it was on cable last weekend.
Yes.
And,
that's a series. That's one of the series.
An amazing story, you know.
Yes.
And it's something that we all need to see from that and even the Wall Street in Oklahoma, you know, somebody needs to make a documentary about that as well.
Yeah, oh, there's so much.
There is one. Oh, yeah.
We have just coming to the end, you guys.
Okay.
Very informative.
Yeah.
A whole lot of stuff. I'll be talking to this friend of mine who is going to give us the real story on Wildy, on the boys.
Yes.
And
yes.
Because she was the main, you know, reporter in that particular time. So, you know, we want to know that. And as soon as she gets in town, I will, you know, have her on. She's promised to come on. And a hello to Sonny Sutherland. So trying to get in touch with him. And so we'll be talking to him, and I'll have some announcements to make about, you know, the collection of books by certain people that we should know about. Anyway, thank you.
Great. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. I missed Eric tonight, but I guess he's taking a sabbatical or vacation or whatever.
No, he's working. He's working.
Okay.
You know,
and
he's still involved, you know,
now.
with the whole political thing.
In the words
and
of
also
Zora Neale Hurston. Yes,
theater
in the words
also.
Of Zora Neale Hurston, if I don't see you all anymore in life, I'll
so,
see you all
yeah.
in Africa.
Okay. K-Town Salon, everybody. Join us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Kay Thompson.